Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro call. Today is April 23rd, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by going to Google Podcasts or Stitcher or iHeartRadio or Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast application you prefer to use. You can also go to motorvitality.com, of course, and download years and years and years and years worth of them. I am getting a little bit of background noise, so I would ask you guys that if you're able to just mute your phones while you're not talking. And that happens sometimes where people are muted and there's background noise, and then I'll ask a question and you're trying to unmute yourself to answer. Feel free to pop in. I mean, that's if I've started the next sentence or somebody else has, then feel free to jump back in. That's what happens sometimes with the call, But anyway, want to start the call off the same way I do every week, which is by, let me just make sure that I remember to make a couple announcements first. First and foremost, this week is the week that WQA has launched their virtual convention schedule. So there are a ton of classes that are uploaded online that if you haven't had an opportunity to view or look at the schedule, there's some really great classes there, some really awesome stuff to kind of review and listen to. And there's some live stuff. Another one, coming in today, there's some things that they're some panels and some presentations that are live that you can log on to and observe and watch today. It's pretty good stuff. So I want to do that. Also, I want to let you guys know we do have a guest speaker coming on scheduled for May 7th. I love it when we have our guest speakers, but this was Jen's suggestion. Mike Sennett he is legal counsel for the Water Quality Association. He is going to be our guest and is going to be speaking about the WQA Code of Ethics and some of the changes that were made and how those changes will impact our industry and how to go about using those changes and utilizing those. I think a lot of people are really working hard to get their certification right now. We do have, by the way, in 2 weeks, we will have we're currently working our way through the guided fundamentals course. I'm sorry, the guided basics course, the WQA basics course. And in 2 weeks, we will send out information on this within the next couple days on the exact date, but in 2 weeks we're going to begin the fundamentals course. So if you are looking to get your certification and you maybe have completed the basics course, then you can sign up for the fundamentals and we'd love to help you get through that and guide you through. Even if you haven't signed up for the basics, you haven't started the basics, then you can catch up on those. Those are pre-recorded and there's 7 lessons that are pre-recorded on those and we can, of course, mentor you live and go through. So if you have any questions about that, reach out, but put it on your calendar May 7th. Actually, put it on your calendar for every week. But May 7th, we do have a guest speaker, which is kind of nice. Now I'm going to go start with the questions that I ask every week, just about every week. And that is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country or anything we can help you with? Any questions that you have or anything we can help with?
Callie, I have a couple of things if nobody else does.
Go, Jen. Even if somebody else does, then you should go.
I'll go first? Okay. I want to say thank you and congratulate the Water Quality Group and Advanced Water Treatment. We've done an accelerated basics course for the modular education program, and in 2.5 weeks, we have kicked it out. And I think the only reason it was 2.5 weeks is because of power outages and things like that. But really, they've done awesome starting the fundamentals next week also. But they kicked butt on that. So congratulations to all of you. I also wanted to congratulate Howard, who is sitting across from me right now, but I want to congratulate him. He had his first creative appointment, and that was, you know, getting out there and canvassing. And then yesterday, just as I was receiving the question on, we had a panel for business operations on the Water Quality Association conference. And just as I was answering the question about my presentation, talking about still getting out there and canvassing and things like that, and is it proven that these techniques are working, I received a text message from him that he got a chance to speak to a builder, and the builder is giving him the opportunity to test the water in all the new homes. So that is awesome. You know, activity creates productivity, and getting out there, I know we have a, you know, some of us are shelter in place, but we can still get out there and kind of start drumming up business for when we're done with this craziness. So awesome job, Howard.
Thank you.
So
that's all I got.
That goes, you know, for a lot of people, when you talk about canvassing, you said this yesterday on the panel, and I know most people in our industry probably understand, although I suspect that some don't, and I don't know who all is on the call. We had quite a few people log on here this morning, but let me just clarify the word canvassing, okay? Because when we talk about canvassing, we're not talking about going door to door, and I think that's what a lot of people think of in their mind. We're going to canvass a neighborhood, and I suppose that is a term that is used for that, you know, where you go out and you either, you know, plaster the area with flyers, or you knock on, you go door knocking and you're talking to people. When Jen and I make reference to the word canvassing, we're not necessarily talking about going and knocking on every door. We're talking about covering the area with and making sure that we know everything there is to know about the area. So I know it works. I know there's a lot of companies out there. I've had this discussion with a lot of people, but me personally, even in the best of times, even when you don't have a pandemic going around with the shelter-in-place order, I don't enjoy door knocking. You know, I don't enjoy going door to door and knocking on the door and saying, "Hey, can I test your water?" And we're offering a free water analysis and stuff like that. I never have enjoyed that, and I think mostly it's because when I'm sitting at home with my family, I don't like it when a sales guy or gal interrupts me and knocks on the door and tries to sell me something. Not to mention the fact, if you go strictly on a more practical level, you know, it is a numbers game. That's very true. Everybody in sales has heard that. It's a numbers game. You knock on 100 doors, you know what percentage, right? So let's say you're going to get in four houses. You knock on 100 doors, you're going to get in four houses and maybe sell two of them, right? So that's easy. If you know what your success rate is on each stage, then it's pretty easy to plan out what numbers you're going to do, because those numbers stay pretty consistent. So what gets ignored in that calculation, in my opinion, though, is the fact that if you have to knock on 100 doors to get in four homes, that means 96% of the people, and 98% if you consider the, you know, a 50% closing ratio on that type of thing, which it may be higher, it may be lower, but it's not going to be that much. You know, if you have a, you know, that means that over 90% of the people, 95, 96, 98% of the people that you've spoken to have told you no. And I personally don't like that kind of rejection. I think even people who don't mind it, people that go out there, I do think that it that kind of constant rejection, as compared to the amount of affirmation, is, I think it can be toxic. I have this theory that is why salespeople tend to be very, often tend to be very unhealthy, and you know, there's a lot of, not always, of course, right? But there are a lot of people in our industry. We've done a call about this. We may be due to talk about it again, just the historical, you know, the importance of staying healthy and keeping a steady calendar and health regime, and making sure you're eating right. It's really easy to get unhealthy, both physically and mentally, in this job. But I think that when you have that kind of rejection adding to it, it it certainly contributes. So when we talk about canvassing, we are talking about, and what Howard was doing was going out to the new construction. So there are not people there, okay, but he's going, I mean, there are some contractors because they're considered essential and on certain stages of the homes, even in Michigan. You're going out and first and foremost, making a note of where these homes are and what stages they're in, and making a plan for when the world comes back alive on how to reach out and get in contact with the potential home buyers or the home builders, like Jen's talking about there, so that the activity creates productivity. Those are things when you're going to the new construction home, you know, in Jen's area, everybody who's building a house there, where Jen's working, where Howard was working, they are in an area where every single person who builds a house is going to put in water treatment from somebody. So it's not a question of whether or not they're going to buy something. You don't have to go in and educate them and convince them that they're going to buy something. It really simply becomes a question of who they're going to buy it from. So there's really only one reason they're not going to buy from you in that instance, and that's that they don't know about you, that there are a lot of other choices and somebody else got there and convinced them that they were a better choice. So you at least want to be in the running, and that's what we're talking about when we're talking canvassing, is going out and making sure that we are canvassing the area and making sure that everybody in that area knows who we are and are aware of what we do. Do you agree with that, Jen and or Howard?
Yeah, I usually just call it business development. But yeah, right now is a good time because a lot of these guys are, their construction managers still have to check in on the site. And like this guy yesterday, he was checking basements for water. So, I mean, they're going to be around, and you're going to be the only person that they're probably going to talk to. So I think it's a good opportunity.
Yeah. Good.
See, Howard made sure not to, give him a hug or anything like that.
No, I sat in my truck. He was standing outside in a driveway. They were about 10, 12 feet away from each other. And, you know, he just was happy to talk to somebody, so.
You know, that kind of brings up a good point, too, right? People are kind of getting to that point now where they are, and I want to encourage everybody to, you know, stay safe. But I get that, I understand everybody is ready to get out and get back to work, you know, or just get back to living. I mean, that's definitely, I think we're going to be seeing. I find it consistent with that, you know, when you're saying that he's just looking for somebody to talk to. You know, even if you don't run across somebody, I think it's really important. You know, I'm thinking about the people we're working with on Long Island, for example. I'm talking to you, Bob, Maria. You know, there are a lot of new homes out there, a lot of new construction, and this is the perfect time to go out there, identify where they are, map them, and create a plan for, you know, what you're going to do when the thing, you know, and to reach out and see if you can find the contractors and the people that are working and the homeowners, and see, you know, just to dig up that information on them so that you know what activity to pursue when the world starts to wake back up a little bit. So, excellent. All right. Anybody else have anything? Other thoughts on that? Comments?
No, but I have a different topic.
Go, Stacy.
How do I find out if, because I'm not finding it anywhere on the Consumer Confidence Report, if an area, if a community has, are using polyphosphates to treat the water? Would it have to be on the Consumer Confidence Report?
No. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not. That is a great question. And unfortunately, in my experience, when you go in and you ask, first off, the people that would be in the know are not forthcoming with that information. I've tried to, you know, reach out and get in touch with them and find out. I know that there has been, even way back when I was in sales, there was absolute strong evidence that the community was using polyphosphates in their water. you know, and for those of you that aren't aware, that are on the call, polyphosphates, a lot of times in a, if I may, Stacey, I'll continue to answer your question. This is a great topic. So polyphosphates basically are a chemical that's added that coats the substances in the water. So you will most commonly see them used in an area where you have a public water supply in a small community. So maybe it's a mobile home park, or a small subdivision, or even a small village will have three or four wells that they pull their water from, and the water might have a lot of iron in it, or a lot of manganese, or something like that. And they will add a chemical called polyphosphate to the water, and what that chemical does is it surrounds the iron and keeps it from sticking to vertical surfaces. It's basically the same substance, the same chemical you would see in your Ritter Rust or your Sprinkle Clear type irrigation products, right, where you it sucks this chemical, the sprinkler water sucks this chemical through and surrounds the iron mineral and keeps it from sticking to vertical surfaces. That's why if you ever go to a house that's using this type of a system for irrigation, you'll notice that you have these brown splotches on sidewalks or on a driveway. And that's because polyphosphates will break down with time and with heat. And so if you have your sprinklers, for example, zoned in such a way where you have dips in the sidewalk or something, you know, where water has, especially in July or August where the heat is really high, then the water evaporates and leaves the iron because the polyphosphates break down and you'll still get these spotty stains on your sidewalks. Well, you take that same chemical, that same type of chemical, and you apply it to a municipal system, like a village or something like that. They'll put it in to beautify the community typically. Okay. So a mobile home park, especially, right? So they'll have irrigation systems and gardens, especially on the entrance. And because often you do not have a lot of water treatment in the mobile homes or in a small community like this. And so they will, they'll put this chemical in order to keep the landscaping looking good, okay, or to keep, you know, to help people, you know, the water destroys the mobile homes and then people get upset and they move out or don't rent in the mobile homes. So they'll do that to try and protect the homes themselves. It's not always in a mobile home park or, in fact, the city of Detroit, this is one of the issues. It was a similar thing. Well, I mean, Flint rather. When Flint was buying water from Detroit, this was the big issue because Detroit added a sequestering agent, a polyphosphate, into their water as part of when they sold that water to their communities, which is why they didn't have a lead issue when Flint was buying water from Detroit, because the polyphosphates coated the pipes, the delivery pipes, and prevented the lead from entering into the water there. When Flint flipped the switch and started supplying water to out of the Flint River, they did not add this chemical, which goes back to your question, Stacey. How do you find out if they're adding it or not? I have asked that question of village managers, of water treatment plant managers, and the responses that I have gotten have either been skepticism, where they do not want to give that information. You know, people are concerned, I think, that there would be a media story or that somebody wouldn't understand, or they don't want it out there. You know, people know that chlorine is added. They sometimes know that fluoride is added. But suddenly you start throwing out a couple long syllable words and chemicals, and the media gets a hold of it or somebody gets a hold of it, and suddenly they're creating a big panic in the municipalities on defense mode, trying to explain to an uneducated public what this stuff is and what it's doing. And so I have found the officials that are aware of what it is to be very cautious. And frankly, I've never had somebody tell me what's in there. I think more commonly, though, is most of them just simply don't know. even people at the level of testing and monitoring and making sure that the right amount of injected chemical or they're going to call it something like disinfectant or treatment chemical, or, you know, it's going to be some vague or generic term that you've got the operator that's responsible for monitoring those levels. But that monitor, you know, they're not going to know exactly what chemical makeup is in the solution that they're monitoring or checking. So in a nutshell, I think my experience has been the evidence of polyphosphates are in the water treatment. And I can tell you when I recognized it mostly is when I would sell a system, because as I said, polyphosphates break down with heat and with time. Okay. So, if you have water, let's say you've got 2 parts per million of iron in the water. Okay. Which is, you know, it's pretty common in the Midwest, and you've got polyphosphated water, then you can, you know, what ends up happening is, let's say they are adding the polyphosphate to the water at the beginning of the month, at the very beginning of the month. Okay. So you've got a water softener in one of the homes in this community where they're being supplied by polyphosphated water. So towards the end of the month, the last 2 weeks of the month, the water softener is working really well. It's taking the iron out. It's taking the hardness and the iron out. You're not getting any iron bleed through. Okay. Now, first part of the month, the village injects their monthly supply of polyphosphates into the water. And so for the first couple weeks of the month, they're getting a ton of iron bleed through, coming right through that water softener, because that polyphosphate's coating the iron. It's still softening the water. It's still softening. Okay, because that's a different chemical. It's not working. On polyphosphates aren't coating the hardness, but the iron is not being. It's not able to stick to the resin because it's got this chemical coating on it, like an M&M shell on the outside of it. Okay, and so it's running right through the water softener, and it's sitting in the water heater or in the back of the toilet, where that chemical then breaks down with heat and with time, and so you get a lot of staining in the house. It's very frustrating to have that. How do you treat it? Depending on what's there, I've seen some success with tannin resin or anion resin, removing it. I've seen some success with that. Also an oxidizing filter. I mean, you know, again, you're limited on space. You start putting this other, a lot of times the places that polyphosphate the water are, you know, they're supplying water to homes that don't have a lot of either financial resources or room to install the additional equipment. But you can, of course, oxidize the iron and filter it out prior to the water softener. That's an option. You know, short of that, a 20-inch BB 5-micron filter will help with it as well. It's going to capture some of it, but you're still going to get some bleed through. You know, it'll help a little bit. But to go back and answer your original question, I personally have never had any success, and that's not anything I have ever seen on a consumer confidence report. Although it wouldn't surprise me if there are some consumer confidence reports that have it out there. I have seen some CCRs. You know, as I've graded WQA certification stuff, I've seen some of it that, you know, that will talk about that stuff, kind of get ahead of it and let people know what's going on, but they'll spin it as a positive. You know, we do this so you don't get the stain on your, you know, so they might say that, but I've actually never seen that in a consumer confidence report, and because it's not a health-related issue and it's something that they're putting, it's not in any of the Detroits. You know, we know that they add it because of the Flint thing, but it's not anywhere on any municipal supply that I've seen come out of the Detroit area. So, anyway, does that answer your question?
Yeah, actually quite a bit, because I'm looking, so it's part of my territory. It's a city that is about 20,000 people, but probably a third of them are wells.
Mm-hmm.
And, Actually, I was talking to a rep in the next county from me, and he said, well, they put polyphosphates in the well, because I was talking about problems with tankless water heaters clogging up.
Yeah.
With the softener. So, and he said, well, it's probably the polyphosphates. And I'm like, huh? And making problem being with water heaters, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, keep in mind, you know, so remember, and this is something that we do run into often in the industry, okay, is that, you know, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, 85% of the homes in America have hard water, or 85% of the people in America have hard water. So when they're looking at what they're, how they're going to treat the water, remember, only 9% of the people in this country own water softeners.
Right.
Okay. And so when you're looking at treating the water, you're looking at what's going to work for most people, right?
Right.
And so, you know, they're not looking at the 9%. They're looking at the you know, 91% that don't have water treatment. And so, of course, they're going to do stuff like that. So it does that part does pose a challenge.
Yeah.
Great question. Actually, go ahead.
This is a guy that has like 25 years experience in this industry in the county next, and was notorious for dipping into my territory, apparently.
yeah. Oh, one of those, right? Yeah.
He's a friend these days. But he said Greenfield used to put polyphosphates in the water. So I don't know if they still do, but they did, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
So what those of you on the call that some of you, I know we've had quite a few people on the call recently. And again, I have to say, because we did not send out a message on this one, and yet we had a lot of people log on here. And I have to say how much I really, that just means a ton to me. I know we joke about it. And if you log on like 5 minutes early, you hear us joking and kind of goofing around and stuff like that. But seriously, I'm truly honored and touched, and on behalf of the entire Motor Vitality team, I'm just grateful that we have an opportunity to provide this forum. I really hope that you get value out of it and that you learn something. I certainly do every week. I look forward to this call and talking to you guys. But it really does mean a ton to me that you log on even when we haven't sent out a reminder. So thanks for that. What you saw this morning is I had a topic I was going to talk about, and we'll do this one in the future. I was actually going to talk about, you know, using this as an opportunity to explain to your family what you do for a living, because it's incredible to me, and we'll talk about this down the road, but it's incredible to me how long I worked in this industry, and my kids and my, you know, when I was married, my wife, they really had no idea of what I actually did for a living. And so I was going to talk about that part of it, but I actually love these calls where we get a question and it takes us in a completely different direction, because this call truly is about you guys and about the industry. I would way rather talk about the topics you guys want to talk about than what Jen and I brainstorm over sometimes 15 minutes before the call and say, hey, what are we going to talk about today? So with that, anybody have any final comments or thoughts on this? With that, then I am going to say thank you very much. Everybody stay safe, please. I know everybody's antsy to get out there, but don't get too antsy. And stay safe, and we will talk to you next week, if not before. Thank you very much, everybody. Sincerely.
Take care.